Welcome to the Keystone Kickoff Show, brought to you by the Keystone Sports Network. Get the best Penn State sports news and analysis at KeystoneSportsNetwork.com or download the Keystone Sports app from your smartphone.
Hello and welcome to the Keystone Kickoff Show. I am Jim Galante, shoveling out also in the Midwest, Dustin Schutte. How we doing, Dustin?
Well, I haven't been able to get to the gym because I've been stranded in Indiana. So I've, you know, been using some shoveling as my workout this these past couple of days, Jim. But I'm doing well. How about you?
Well, 18 inches of snow here, very steep driveway. Not a fun week here, Dustin. And what's interesting is we had an early forecast for next weekend to be another foot of snow. However, it looks like that's not going to come to fruition. It kind of shifted out to sea. Who knows, though, if it comes back. And it's interesting because this weekend, Penn State is having a hockey game at Beaver Stadium. So I don't know what the snow plans are for a hockey game, but hopefully it's just going to be really cold. And that will be it as far as tough weather, though.
Yeah, you shouldn't have any problem keeping the ice frozen out at Beaver Stadium. That should be pretty easy to handle. So that'll be unlike. Didn't they do the NHL game? Wasn't it in Miami this year?
Yeah, I don't know exactly how they pulled that off. Obviously, you know, some refrigeration or freezing, you know.
Yeah,
but yeah, keeping that ice frozen. I wonder what the, you know, that must be just bizarre to be in that kind of weather. Now, Florida has had, I'll call it chilly weather. I have friends, including my brother in Florida, who say things like, oh, it's cold down here too. It dipped down into the 50s. Screw you.
I used to be one of those people when I lived in Orlando. You don't think it's going to affect you, but then it does.
Screw you too, Dustin. Back in reality, getting the winter weather, getting the snow. It is crazy to have to deal with it. I know it's not the case, but I hope that's the last one for the winter. But I know I'm probably going to be wrong. Anyway. How about we move from weather to college football? Doesn't matter that the season's over. Still lots going on. And one of our favorite topics, Dustin, it's the college football playoff format. And it seemed like everybody was in agreement that they wanted to expand it from 12 teams, which a couple years ago I thought would have been ridiculous. I mean, come on. Mm-hmm. But I think these last couple of years have shown us with the parity, it does make sense. It is logical. It does make sense to go from 12 to 16 teams, but because it's logical, that of course means they're not going to do it.
Right. Well, I mean, we talked, it's the easiest format. We don't think that the buys really have a beneficial advantage after going, you know, those teams have gone 1-7 the last 2 years. So you would think, let's just move it to 16. Everybody plays the same number of games. You just, you know, match up the 1-16 and maybe you play two home games or two campus site games, I should say, in those first two rounds. But I don't have a problem with it sticking to 12. I just don't like the construction of it because I don't think that getting one of those top four seats, maybe they should have the bottom four teams get the bye and see how that goes. But yeah, I mean, I'm fine with either one, I think, but 16 does make more sense to me.
Well, the problem, and it's on the Big Ten pretty much. The Big Ten was pushing, they wanted it to be 24 teams. If not immediately, at least within the next couple of years. And, that is not the hill I think you want to die on. But apparently that's what the Big Ten did, Dustin.
Yeah, I thought the 2014 proposal was a bluff to try to get what they wanted from the SEC and say, we're going to make the most ridiculous claim we can to try to get what we want, which was, what was it at the time? The four for 16, they wanted like the four automatic bids for the Big Ten and the SEC, and then 2-2-2, or however that worked out. I don't remember because I haven't visited it in a while, but I always thought that was a bluff. Like, okay, if you're not going to give us a 16, let's go all the way out to the 24 team and see if the SEC will cave. And clearly they did not. And the Big Ten wants to, is still pushing 24 teams, which that's ridiculous. But, and I don't know in what, like, there would be no break in college football until spring if you went that far, in my opinion. So, yeah, I'm not shocked that we are sticking at 12. I really do think at some point it's going to get to 16 because that's just what makes sense. But we'll see. College football very rarely makes sense to the logical person.
Well, that's what I was going to say. There you are using logic and common sense, Dustin, and they have no place in the college football game. None. Just should not be part of the conversation. And in a lot of these things, sometimes the devil is in the detail, and maybe the headline was, gee, they're going to stick with 12 instead of 16. But there's a couple other little items in there. One of them is we saw this past year, Duke won the ACC, but did not get a bid to the playoffs. Just a word of advice to Duke. Just a word of advice. Don't lose five games, okay?
Yeah, sure.
If you want to make the playoffs. But with that said, they now have put in a rule that instead of it being the top five conference champion winners, you know, the highest seeded, which they always thought would mean the Power Four would get in there. Here was a situation where it didn't work out the way they planned, with Duke being 7-5. They weren't among the top, you know, five conference winners. So, gee, that didn't work out the way we wanted. So we'll just make it a rule. If you win a Power Four conference, you have to get in.
Yeah, they keep changing the rules every single year, and it's annoying. So, but here's what I will say. There are two things, and this is going to sound contradictory. Number one, I actually kind of like the idea that a team that, even though they may not have the best record, has a chance to still get in. You see that in college. Now, it doesn't happen very often in college basketball, and I don't think it would happen very often in college football either. I think that this would be the outlier as opposed to the commonality. But Duke getting in this year would have, I mean, just more chaos. Why not? Would have been, I think it would have been kind of fun just to see whatever their record was, 8-5 at the end of the regular season, get in there. So I actually don't hate that rule. The one thing I hate about it, though, is it's a very clear push to try to get the other G5 team out of there. Like, they don't want two G5 teams in there, in my opinion. And that's you're not going to have two teams that are worthy of a spot every single year. And I don't know that this year you had two, but you limit those opportunities and those possibilities. And I don't know that that's necessarily fair, but I don't know. Like, I legitimately don't hate the idea of getting in an 8-5 if they win their conference championship, just because, like, it has to mean something. Other, like, this past year, the Big Ten championship meant nothing. And most years it's probably not. But I think it at least puts a little bit more emphasis on that game.
Well, I think they also changed within the ACC, and I think the other conferences will, if they have not already, follow suit on their tiebreaker setup. Sure. Which the way Duke got in with five losses was, I think it was like three of their losses were out of conference games. And they did not take that into consideration in their tiebreaker, which was probably silly of them, because when they use their very complex set of tiebreaker rules just within the conference, this is what you end up with. So I believe now the tiebreaker will include where you are ranked within the college football playoff rankings, which makes sense because that's also part of the determination of making the playoffs. So why not take the more highly regarded team like Miami instead of Duke to get into that conference championship game? Which leads us into, Dustin, the other little detail that just kind of snuck into these rules, which is the Notre Dame rule, which is if Notre Dame is in ranked within the top 12, they get an automatic bid. Well, you might say, well, Jim, 12 teams make it into the playoffs. Why is that an issue? Well, because that premise is wrong. It's not the top 12 teams. There's a group of five team who may not be ranked in the top 12 who will take the place of number 12, say. There's also one of the Power Four teams. It could have been an ACC or a Big 12 team conceivably win their conference championship and not be in the top 12. So you would eliminate teams ranked 11 and 12. Well, my friends, Notre Dame can't get bumped. In other words, you're treating them differently than you are every other team. This year, this past season, with that rule, Notre Dame would have gotten in. Miami, who made it to the national championship game, would not have made it in. So essentially, Dustin, you could have team number 12, 11, and 10 get bumped out of it now because of Notre Dame and the Notre Dame rule.
Yeah, and I hate it. I think most people probably do outside, unless you're an Irish fan. Number one is if I'm the selection committee and I don't think that Notre Dame's one of the top 12 teams, I'm just not going to put them in the top 12. So that's one solution to that. The second part of it is I understand the idea of we don't get a conference championship game, but whose fault is that? I'm just saying when you point the finger, maybe you got four pointing back at you. That's what I'm trying to say here, right? Like, they get no sympathy from me. They can complain and whine and throw a hissy fit all they want, but like you've had years to do this, to join a conference, to pick your conference, which anyone would take it. So you could join the Big 12 and run roughshod over that league every single year. Same with the ACC, or you could join the Big 10 and the SEC and be tested. And I don't want to say almost guarantee yourself a spot, but if you finish near the top of the Big 10 or the SEC, you're getting in. And when you have this rule, I would, if I'm the commissioner of the Big 10, the SEC and the Big 12, I think the ACC is probably stuck. But if I'm a commissioner of those other three conferences, I would say, don't schedule Notre Dame. Make them schedule a G5 schedule and the ACC and see if they get in. Cause that's one way to remedy. That's one way for those conferences to remedy that rule.
You know, I'm in agreement with you. Why in the world would you look to help them out if you're in one of the Power Four conferences? I would not. I have another question for you regarding this rule with Notre Dame. I'm going to ask you when we come back.
Happy Valley United is the NIL collective that serves all 31 sports and over 850 student-athletes at Penn State. These opportunities allow student-athletes to engage with charitable causes and participate in business engagements to build their brands while making a positive impact. The collective connects fans, alumni, businesses, and charities with student-athletes harnessing the power of Nittany Nation. Go to happyvalleyunited.com to connect with your favorite Nittany Lion team.
It's quarter number two on the Keystone Kickoff Show, brought to you by the Keystone Sports Network. Get the best Penn State sports news and analysis at KeystoneSportsNetwork.com or download the Keystone Sports app from your smartphone.
Hello and welcome back to the Keystone Kickoff Show with quarter number two. He's Dustin Schutte. I'm Jim Galante. We're talking college football. And Dustin, we wrapped up quarter number one talking about the Notre Dame rule, where special rules for Notre Dame in the choice to make it to the college football playoffs, unlike anybody else, if they are in the top 12 in the final rankings, they automatically get a bid, as opposed to other teams where if you finish 12, you're pretty much guaranteed not to get in because of, you know, a group of five team getting in. Even at number 11, you might not get in. Now it may even be your 10th, and you won't get in because of this Notre Dame rule. But here's my question. You, Dustin, I've now put onto the playoff committee. So you're ranking these teams. And there you are. You know, you're at that number 12 line, okay? And you've got a couple choices there. You got a team like Miami from the ACC, 10-2. You got Notre Dame there, 10-2. maybe a Southeast Conference team, maybe ACC team, a Big 12 team. I don't know. But they're all in that same level, you know, in that same grouping. And you got to put them in a pecking order. Is there any way in the world you would put Notre Dame up to number 12 if you could rationalize putting them at 13?
I personally would not. if it was me, I would not. Because I would again say I'm gonna and part of it is I would look at let's look at the schedule, see who they played. But like Notre Dame had a fluff schedule for a majority of the season. They had two big games early in the year. It's not their fault, or it's not anybody else's fault that they scheduled those games the first 2 weeks of the season and then won 10 games over. I mean, I know they beat USC, and I think there was another decent team in there, but they didn't beat any of the heavy hitters. So let's look at the schedule and let's make a fair assessment. And if just because they're 10-2, I'm not going to put them on that 12 line, especially if their schedule looked like it did this year. My fear, though, Jim, is this is still about money. And if it's, let's say it's Notre Dame against Arkansas out of the SEC and Illinois out of the Big Ten. Which one's going to drive more revenue? Which is going to get more eyeballs? Illinois, Arkansas, or Notre Dame? Because it's kind of the Duke basketball effect where people either love Notre Dame or they hate Notre Dame. So they're going to watch and hope that they, you know, obviously the fans are going to hope they win. The haters are going to hope they lose. So that's why I think that there's a little, it would be a little bit tricky. Me personally, if Notre Dame's on that 12 line, I would say, screw your rule. I'm not putting you in simply because you wanted that rule. But if it's a selection committee thing and it comes down to the wire, I could very easily see them saying, because this is still all about the almighty dollar. Yeah, we're going to give Notre Dame the bump over Illinois, Arkansas, because it's going to be better in terms of viewership.
Well, I would like to think, Dustin, that my integrity would put me above these petty things, that I would look at the things that you're supposed to do. One loss record, actual strength of schedule. I promise you, I would look at all of those things and come to the conclusion that Notre Dame belongs number 13.
There you go.
So there you go. And I'll dare you to challenge me on my integrity for that. So let's move on. Now that we know what Jim's biases are, and I've never hidden those, Dustin. So let's move on. Another interesting story for me is the Dabo Swinney tampering controversy. Not that Dabo is tampering, but he accused Ole Miss of tampering with one of his players. And thus, we all know that tampering goes on. But the way Dabo identified this, there's basic tampering, and then there's like grad school tampering. And that's what Ole Miss is guilty of. And what I found interesting is he went into full detail when text messages came in, phone calls. And just the condensed version for our listeners, a player went into the portal, decided to go to Clemson, moved to Clemson, started attending class at Clemson. He had signed his NIL contract, all of that. Last minute, he was getting hit up by Ole Miss that they would pay him more money. And eventually the kid succumbed to it, switched back out of it, re-entered the portal, said he's going to Ole Miss, and he there were details in this, like they were talking to the player's agent, who essentially said, yeah, there's tampering, but if you pay as much as Ole Miss, he'll go to Clemson, and by the way, then we'll rat out Ole Miss and detail all the tampering that went on. I think the new thing here, Dustin, was Dabo Swinney willing to speak up and going through such detail. My question to you is, what's your reaction to it? And what do you think the NCAA or the conference commissioners, what are they going to do about it, if anything?
Yeah, I would. So I'm on Dabo's side on this because there is a point where, Like, you got to know who's on your team, and you can't just have people coming in midway through spring or whatever the case might be. And second of all, I don't know how that will give you the dirt. I feel like there's some sort of bribery there. I feel like that's not legal, but I'm not an agent and I don't know the rules. So there's one thing that just stuns me a little bit, but you need to have some sort, and I do know why, because the NCAA can't really get anything together at this particular moment, but there needs to be some sort of, the NFL has it. It's a legal tampering period. And basically other players can meet with other organizations and say, you know, before that their free agent status or whatever the case might be, just put in, it can be part of the transfer portal situation where you say, okay, we're going to have a legal tampering period from X date to Y date, but then once the player has signed or whatever, that's the end of, and whether it's a contract or something, you can put guardrails on this. You don't have to let it continue to be a guy is enrolled, going to class, signs an NIL deal, and then all of a sudden he gets swiped away by another program. It doesn't have to be like this. And I don't understand why, like, the NCAA is so afraid of losing lawsuits. But to me, every league has this. Every league has this. Like, you can't tamper with other players. It happens in the NBA, NFL. All those leagues have guidelines and rules and dates and things. So why can't you implement it in college football? I don't understand why we can't do that.
Well, my reaction to it, it's a couple things. First of all, yes, why can't they police the tampering? But the other part of the equation, which I found fascinating, is how about the sanctity of a contract?
Yeah.
And, you know, forget about the onus being on other schools, hey, don't tamper, which I think should be, you know, the rule. But the other thing is, how is it that this player was able to sign a contract and then just say, never mind, and ignore the contract? That's not how it works in the real world. Right. You know, you sign a contract, you're obligated to it. Now, what I also think might be a way to help these, and I'm not a lawyer, but in making these contracts, instead of it just being about, okay, you come here for X number of dollars, how about just like what they do with the coaches? How about putting a buyout clause into the contract?
Yeah.
So it's negotiated. Yep. If you're going to leave, there's a route to do it. But, you know, it's a poison pill of some type. Yeah. And we'll get into it more about, you know, some of the quarterbacks, you know, the quarterback at Duke, Mensah, the quarterback at Washington, the quarterback from Cincinnati who went to Texas Tech. That one seemed to go smoothly. And the conversation was, well, there was $1 million buyout. They paid $1 million and he moved on. And everybody is relatively happy instead of it turning into a lawsuit when a player abandons his contract.
Yeah, I mean, that seemed to be the best case scenario. And so that needs to be how it is across the board. And I think you need to get, when you get these contracts signed, I don't know how they can be broken so easily. I don't know if it's poor written language. I don't know, but you need to have, you should have more of that. And maybe it's a knock on Clemson, who's ever representing them in terms of their contract situation, that it was able to be broken so easily. Now I don't know. Maybe there will be some sort of lawsuit that comes out on the Clemson side. It requires Ole Miss to pay some sort of damages. I don't know, but it's getting to the point where there, I mean, it's always kind of been this way, but there are no rules, and there has to be some sort of guardrail here where you can't just go in, and this is why a lot of coaches stopped doing the spring game last year, right? Because they didn't want to put on film who the best players are and this and that. We don't want somebody to come in and swipe them from the spring transfer portal. And I just think that you can get some sort of written language in the form of a contract, in the form of a buyout, where you're not having this situation repeatedly pop up. And I'm sure Clemson's not the only one, but you do need somebody like Dabo to speak up, and maybe other coaches will follow suit, because if you just stay silent on it, nothing's going to happen. So you do need more coaches to be vocal if it's happening.
And I think if you have, you know, one of our favorite guys for both you and me, Paul Feinbaum, he, you know, kicked in his thoughts on this. And surprise, surprise, he backs the Southeast Conference school, Ole Miss, instead of Clemson, with basically saying, oh, this makes Dabo look bad. Of course, the Ole Miss coach is going to do this. Just like any coach, they're going to do what it takes to win. And he and justifies it. That kind of mindset is what has to change, Dustin.
Yeah, I mean, just because it's not against the rules doesn't mean it's the right thing to do. There are a lot of things that aren't necessarily against the rules that some coaches just refuse to do because they don't know it. They know it's not. Now that number is shrinking. There are a lot of coaches that will do whatever it takes to win football games and however they have to do it. But yeah, you can't put the fault on Dabo here. And like, it doesn't make him look bad. He's just bringing things to light. And to this point, and I will bring this up again, it's like 2 years ago, Matt Rhule said he thought the Big Ten was the best conference in college football and that they would get four teams into the 12-team playoff. And Feinbaum lost his mind, lost more of his hair. And it just like, what happened? The Big Ten got four teams in, won the national championship. They've won it 3 years in a row. So he doesn't always know what he's talking about.
Huh, really? I'm shocked there, Dustin. All right, that's it for quarter number two. Lots more to go when we come back.
Happy Valley United is the NIL collective that serves all 31 sports and over 850 student-athletes at Penn State. These opportunities allow student-athletes to engage with charitable causes and participate in business engagements to build their brands while making a positive impact. The collective connects fans, alumni, businesses, and charities with student-athletes harnessing the power of Nittany Nation. Go to happyvalleyunited.com to connect with your favorite Nittany Lion team.
Let's get back to the action on the Keystone Kickoff Show. Brought to you by the Keystone Sports Network. Get the best Penn State sports news and analysis at KeystoneSportsNetwork.com or download the Keystone Sports app from your smartphone.
Hello and welcome back to the Keystone Kickoff Show. It's quarter number three of our show. He's Dustin, I'm Jim, talking college football and everything that's going on off the field. And Dustin, we were talking about Dabo Swinney speaking up about Ole Miss tampering with one of his players and it being very blatant. And I'm buying into what Dabo's saying, not just that I think he's correct, but the fact that he's presenting so many details to it, you know, so much detailed information. I think it really is legitimate what he's putting out there. But I think what it also does is it represents the schools now at least putting up a bit of a fight instead of it just letting the players run rampant. And with that in mind, I'll bring up the three quarterback examples. And, you know, quarterbacks are the highest value players, the ones that are in the biggest demand. And we've seen it already. Damon Williams, the quarterback at Washington, he tried to bail out of Washington. Washington didn't want to let him go. We had a contract. They fought it. Even the player's agent bailed on him, apparently not thinking what he was doing was right. And guess what? Damon Williams had to concede, give in, and he's back at Washington. We have Brendan Sorsby, who went from Cincinnati to Texas Tech, and the way the story goes, he's getting paid a lot more money by Texas Tech, but he had a buyout in his contract, and that buyout is being paid. So I haven't heard from Cincinnati them going crazy. It's okay. This was how the contract was. And then we finally have, you know, the situation Darren Mensah from Duke, and it sounds like this week he and Duke have out of court settled, but Duke took him to court. They tried to, you know, hold his feet to the fire that he had a multi-year contract. He was obligated to stay at Duke, and, you know, they held his feet to the fire. I guess my question is, Austin, Is the pendulum starting to swing?
Yeah, I would say so, because I think schools and coaches are getting tired of this, where you can't, like, it's one thing if a player just gives you his word. Like, remember way back when somebody would give you their word, and then that was, you know, that was pretty much how it went, right? Like, it, but now today you have to have those, you have to have those contracts in place. And so I think what young people are going to start learning who are playing college sports is this is a dose of the real world. This is what you wanted. And so now you're going to, like, you can't just change jobs. You can't, like, if you are in a contract, you are obligated to fulfill that contract. And if not, there's going to be a penalty. And that's how things work. That's how certain jobs work. There are, in, you know, in my profession, there are jobs like that where you can't just leave to go to another, you know, outlet. There, sometimes you do have a non-compete clause, non-disclosure, you know, all that kind of stuff. So, this is, I do think that schools are going to start to be more active. I do think that there's going to be more, language in these contracts at some point where you can't just up and leave. And if you are going to up and leave, then there's going to be some sort of consequence, penalty, price to pay, if you will. You don't just get the, you can't just up and leave and leave a school in the dark.
Well, that's it. And I think the, as you point out, the real world, hey, I, in my career, I was involved in a situation where I had a 5-year contract with a company. I was gone in less than 2 years, but lots of lawyers were involved from both sides because things were written into the contract. Now, in this situation, it seems like they need to standardize the contracts. You know, they've got lots of money, deep pockets. Go find lawyers who could write you up contracts where players can't just leave. And also put into there, like I said, the buyout clause. So I think when you reach the point where, gee, you're depriving the player of opportunities, well, I think the buyout clause is what can fix that. You know, you may not like the player leaving for a whole lot more money, but, you know, it's kind of in Major League Baseball, Tarek Skubal. You know what? The Detroit Tigers don't want to pay him what he's worth. But guess what? They have repercussions here. Now, that was, you know, there was a collective bargaining agreement for it, but they could alleviate it by saying, hey, the buyout is we trade them early, get some talent in place to do that. And I think that's what they have to learn within college football, within these contracts. Got to remember also, Dustin, this whole NIL and portal thing, you know, signing these guys to contracts, this is all rather new still.
Oh, yeah. I mean, I don't know even what year we're in terms of those contracts and signing those agreements. Like, it just seemed like for a while it was, if you got an NIL deal, I'm sure there was some sort of, you know, paper that you had to sign or legal document or whatever the case might be. But I mean, everybody's still kind of figuring this out because it's snowballed so quickly, and people are, you know, quickly learning that you're going to have certain things in place. Otherwise guys are just going to leave for more, you know, most of the time for more money. And so I do think that at least if there's, you know, a situation where somebody agrees to pay you more money, you have the chance to say, I'd like you to match that or make a counter offer at least. And if not, I'd like to go there. But then this, like the Sorsby situation is a great example. If it, you know what, we can't afford to pay you the $5 million. You give us back what you owe us. And then that way we can go, you know, pay for another quality quarterback. I don't think that's out of line. There's got to be something in place there. And the more it's more like professional sports, that's what happens in professional sports. How many times do you see a trade for future draft picks or for cash considerations or another, you know, whatever? I don't think we're going to end up, I don't think college sports is ever going to get to the point where you're trading players. But there is some sort of, if a guy is, you know, if a guy wants to leave and wants to sit out, you know, and that's might end up being what happens next, Jim, is you get to a season, or maybe you had like Damon Williams, he could decide and say, hey, I'm going to sit out. until you, you know, up my contract or whatever. I think at some point, if we don't get some sort of better language, we will see that. How many, it doesn't happen often, but there are players at certain leagues that refuse to play unless they get a better contract, I'd get traded, whatever the case might be. And I don't think we're going to see trades, but I do think at some point players who are unhappy in their current situation and maybe can't leave because of the contract they signed, they'll just fake an injury, sit out, refuse to play, whatever the case might be.
Well, I hope we don't get to that. And, you know, I was the one who brought up the analogy to professional sports, but probably even the better analogy is to college football coaches who do have that buyout built into their contracts, because the feeling is, you know, let's use Kurt Cignetti as the example. Coaching at James Madison, the opportunity to coach a team in the Big Ten is, you know, upward mobility. And even within the NFL coaches, you know, for you to go take a comparable position on another team as, say, a coach, position coach, a coordinator, may not be that easy, but they can't stop you from moving up to a head coaching job. Well, again, I should stick with the college football example. If you want to leave, there's a buyout. If we want to fire you, there's a buyout. And just why can't that be placed into the contract with the players? I understand it's a little bit different. You know, they are not technically employees, but they're signing contracts, Dustin. Why can't it work be that same way?
And especially if some schools have come up with that language already, it seems clear that some schools have put some sort of, you know, written language in those contracts already, where it's, you know, if you leave, there's going to be a consequence or, you know, whatever. So, yeah, I think that at some point we're going to get to that point where you're going to have, whether it's a 1-year deal or multi-year deal, you're going to get where it's contracts are basically the new national letter of intent. And all this money is obviously going, you know, the scholarship situation, that's basic NIL and rev shares basically replace the scholarship, even though I'm sure they're still getting scholarships. You just have to get to that point, and I don't know how long it's going to take. I would guess not very long. I would guess within the next 3 years, we're going to have contracts, buyouts, all of that good stuff where you're not going to have quite the same level of freedom of movement, because there are going to be some restrictions and some penalties to change schools.
Well, I think there'll still technically be the freedom, but at a price. And the question becomes, who's there to implement this, Dustin? The only people who have power are Tony Petitti and Greg Sankey, the commissioners of the Big Ten and the Southeast Conference. Now, I don't read every article, see everything, but I have not seen anything about them standing up and making pronouncements on this topic.
No, I haven't either, but I think that at some point they probably will, would be my guess. Because what's going to, I think, usually the presidents have to get involved, the school presidents, and I'm sure that they don't want to get, you know, jump into this without knowing. But at some point, I think school presidents, and maybe it's going to come from like the places, and this is what would be concerning, would be like the Purdue's, Illinois's. I'm not going to throw Indiana in that category anymore. But, you know, Northwestern, some of those schools who are pushing for this and say, hey, we can't build a sustainable program the way things are going. We need to have these rules in place. But then teams like maybe Ohio State, Michigan, Indiana, Penn State, teams with access to a lot more money might say, nah, we're good with how this is working, because those teams aren't going to get poached.
Well, I think if those teams get burned enough, you know, it has to have, I think, I'm not sure, but I think, if you talk to these coaches, a lot of them would say, yeah, I wish there weren't this tampering. I wish there wasn't this, but I've got to do it because everybody else is.
Right.
So until the policemen, which are the commissioners of the conferences, step in and say, we're going to wipe it out of the game, nobody's going to agree to it voluntarily.
Yeah, I agree with that. So you got to have somebody in a leadership role decide that what's going to be the rule here moving forward. And like I said, I do think that it's going to happen within the next 3 years. I just don't know exactly what it's going to look like. I'm still a proponent of the 2 or 3 year contract situation. And if a player wants to leave, do the buyout. I still think, too, once you get that in place, I would be in favor of, and I don't know that this will ever be legal in college sports again. I'm also in favor of the one-time transfer rule. If you transfer after your first time, you can sit out for 1 year. Like, there's got to be some sort of, like, people playing 5 years.
All right, that is it. We'll pick up that topic, Dustin, when we come back.
Happy Valley United is the NIL collective that serves all 31 sports and over 850 student-athletes at Penn State. These opportunities allow student-athletes to engage with charitable causes and participate in business engagements to build their brands while making a positive impact. The collective connects fans, alumni, businesses, and charities with student-athletes harnessing the power of Nittany Nation. Go to happyvalleyunited.com to connect with your favorite Nittany Lion team.
We head to the home stretch in quarter number 4 on the Keystone Kickoff Show. Brought to you by the Keystone Sports Network. Get the best Penn State sports news and analysis at KeystoneSportsNetwork.com or download the Keystone Sports app from your smartphone.
Hello and welcome back to the Keystone Kickoff Show. It's quarter number 4. I'm Jim. He's Dustin. Dustin, you finished up quarter number 3 talking about players getting those extra years. You talked about that fifth year. Forget the fifth year, Dustin. These guys, TJ Finley.
Yeah.
He's on his seventh team and his third child, too. Not that that has anything to do with it, but I just thought it was an interesting statistic. 7 teams, 3 children. Penn State's getting a transfer portal player from UCLA. He spent 7 years at UCLA. He is going to be in his 8th year, Dustin. And this is when you have vague rules like, well, you could apply for another medical redshirt year.
Yeah.
And, you know, we saw this. Chambliss, the quarterback at Ole Miss, he was seeking another year. He was denied. And, you know, they wanted a medical redshirt, and it was no kind of injury. Apparently, he got his tonsils taken out. So I think he wants to use that as his medical reason for having another year. So it is totally getting out of hand. I think they'd be better off just with a hard and fast rule, which leads to the coaches get together. And currently it had always been you had 5 years to play 4 seasons. Once you step on the field once, that's it. You can't get a red shirt. Well, a few years back, they said, well, that's not quite right. How about if we give the player 4 games and you could still maintain your red shirt? Okay, that passes. Then it became, well, how about you get 4 games and postseason, whether it's a bowl game or the playoffs? Okay. Now their proposal, Dustin, is, yeah, how about you get to play 9 games and still maintain your red shirt? If you reach that point, Dustin, why don't you just give them the 5th year?
Yeah, and maybe that's the point that maybe it's like the Big Ten 2014 playoff situation. Maybe they're just trying to go as ridiculous as possible so that they can actually get what they want, which is 5 years or 5 seasons of eligibility to play in 5 years. I still think 5 years to play 4 is adequate, I think. And I'm not opposed to, so I'm going to say a couple different things here. I'm not opposed to guys getting the opportunity to play 3 or 4 games in redshirt, especially in football. But the thing that drives me nuts is in no other sport can you do that. Like, why can a basketball player not play in whatever the percentage is, 7 games, we'll say, you know, for 2 minutes at the end in a blowout game and loses redshirt year? That to me doesn't make sense. Why can a volleyball player not step on for 1 point, you know, in a match and get that experience? So I understand football. There tends to be more injuries, the physicality of it. You might have to go a little bit deeper in your depth chart in certain situations, but I want to see some sort of blanket rule where, whether it's a percentage, whether it's a certain number of games, whatever the case might be, where every sport is either allowed to have a, you know, to play and compete, or they're just not. But if you're going to do this and you're going to try to push for 5 years of eligibility, what I want to see then is the NC, like, no red shirts, no medical red shirts. Don't care if you break your leg and you can't play, that's 1 year of eligibility gone. So really think about this before you want to push forward with it. You don't get any medical red shirts. You don't get any red shirts, period. You get 5 years to play, five seasons of eligibility across 5 seasons, however that comes out. But you can't petition the NCAA. There are no more waivers. Just get rid of the waiver system.
I think that's exactly how it should be, and maybe we're headed there. Because I would think if there's no exceptions, it would be easier to enforce that rule. Well, I'm sure we'll be talking more about those things, Dustin. One more news item I wanted to throw at you. Josh Pate, very well-known commentator on college football, he came out this past week with his plan for college football and college football playoff. Most of it I'm in agreement with, and a lot of it were things that we spoke about. Real quick, to outline what he talked about doing was move the season up. Forget week zero. That's week one. You start playing a week earlier. You get the season done a week earlier. Thanksgiving weekend, which had typically been the last week of the regular season, make that the weekend of the conference championship games. The very next week, you start the playoffs. I believe he anticipated 16 teams. Make that first round the home game. The very next week, you play the next game, also at a home venue. It's easier for logistics for teams to plan for it. The following week, you play the semifinals. Then you have your final back on the traditional New Year's Day. You know, you had a little break in between there with Christmas. That's all fantastic. The one other little note he put in there was that same Thanksgiving weekend that we would only have the conference championship games, he said, hey, how about we grab 6 of the bowl games and we play those bowl games that weekend, which would be a 13th game for more teams than those who play in the conference championship game. So maybe partially it's to make it more fair number of games. It's not a negative playing in the conference championship game because other highly ranked teams have to play also. They play in the bowl game. It kind of pumps up those bowl games because those games now have meaning. And then once if you're done January 1st, you're done before the NFL playoffs happen. You also then, it gives the opening a more fair portal time, and you push back the recruiting day, signing day, till after January 1st also. What do you think of the plan, Dustin?
I love it all except for the bowl games on the same day as the conference championships. I think everything he said makes sense. We've even talked about it. Move the season up 1 week, eliminate that second bye if you have to. And that all sounds good. The 2 home games, I know we're both on board with that for the first 2 rounds of the college football playoff. I don't understand what he's trying to do with the bowl games. That makes no sense to me. I understand. Here's the thing, Jim, that needs to happen. I think we've seen that bowl games can work, and maybe not every player is going to play, but I was locked into that Pop-Tarts Bowl. You just have to have better marketing. Like, you've got to have more people that are under the realization that, okay, bowl games aren't what they used to be. They need to be a little bit of a sideshow. You need to have some more fun with this, because I would bet, I mean, I don't know. I didn't look at the stats, and I'm sure that the viewership is out there, but I would bet the Pop-Tarts Bowl was probably the highest rated non-playoff game this postseason. And it's simply because, like, there are people that I know who don't watch football at all that are like, oh, pop, there's a giant Pop-Tart that's going to get toasted at the end of this. Like, let's tune in and see what happens. So I don't think bowl games, I think you can still make them work. You just have to be more creative. And they've tried, some places have tried some other things, the Duke Mayo Bowl and dumping people with mayo, and, you know, the Potato Bowl, you'd get dumped with a big Gatorade bath of French fries and all that kind of stuff. I just think if those get more creative, you don't have to put more of those bowl games. And if you put those bowl games the same day as conference championship games, I can't imagine there's going to be high viewership numbers for those games anyway, because everybody's going to be locked into the conference championship.
Well, the other downfall is it would be so quick. All of a sudden, you know, you can't schedule a team until the last game of the regular season. So you have literally 1 week for your fans to make arrangements, because it's not going to be a home game. You have to travel somewhere and make travel arrangements. That would be difficult logistically. It's also where, you know, it's Thanksgiving weekend. People probably have made family plans, that type of thing. You're already traveling back to the home, you know, hometown, and all of a sudden, oh, you know, the change of plans. And to your point, you mentioned, you know, the Pop-Tart Bowl is getting a lot of notoriety as being very popular. But overall, as much as a lot of people complain, oh, the bowl games, they don't mean much anymore, people are watching. The ratings are still good for them. They're still being put out there. I think one of the things, though, is the question of players opting out of these bowl games. And I think this may tie in a little bit to that 5 years to play, five seasons. So those freshmen who might be redshirting otherwise, even though now those games don't count, the postseason. But I think just the idea of, well, you know what? I can play this freshman all I want during the season to get experience in a blowout game, either, you know, plus or minus. He gets to play, maybe get some experience. So you have a larger roster to pick from to play in those games. So players are opting out. If you also want to, you know, how about a mass insurance policy for the players? I think there's some who will go, hey, look, it's more important for me to get ready for the combine. Okay, fine. But other players who maybe just don't want to get hurt, or that, you know, hey, a lot of money's being made. How about sharing the wealth a little bit? Put it in that they get an insurance policy if they get hurt, and also they get a little something for showing up for the game.
Right. I think there's a lot to be said for that. I think that you could, you know, whether it's the bowl contract itself that says it's going to pay each player X amount of dollars, or whether it's worked into those contracts that we talked about that you must play in a bowl game, you know, whatever the case, I think there is probably something for that. And I think a lot of people now have come to the realization that players aren't going to, sometimes your best players aren't going to play in those bowl games, but it is an opportunity to see some of those younger guys get an opportunity to play and get a look, an early glimpse of what your team might look like next season. So I'm sure there's going to be some sort of solution. You could probably work it in where, you know, unless you are a senior, you have to play in the bowl game or something, you know, unless you're an NFL
part
draft
pick. Part of your contract, that your compensation contract.
Right, exactly. And so I think that, I think that will probably be one thing that they work in, or maybe it's something where unless you're, you know, projected to be a third round draft pick, you know, first three rounds or something like that. I don't know. I don't hate that players sit out. I just hate that it's in mass. Like some guy's a seventh round pick or an undrafted free agent probably should play in that game.
And Penn State saw that this year. There's a couple Vega Ioane is going to be a first round draft pick. Fine. Got it.
Right.
The rest of the offensive line also sat out. I'm betting most of them won't have any NFL career. Dustin, that's going to have to be it. Thank you so much. Thank all of you for tuning in. Make sure you join us next time on the Keystone Kickoff Show.
Happy Valley United is the NIL collective that serves all 31 sports and over 850 student-athletes at Penn State. These opportunities allow student-athletes to engage with charitable causes and participate in business engagements to build their brands while making a positive impact. The collective connects fans, alumni, businesses, and charities with student athletes harnessing the power of Nittany Nation. Go to happyvalleyunited.com to connect with your favorite Nittany Lion team.